Many Bible-believing Christians are convinced that God blesses those nations that stand with Israel and curses those that don't. Stephen Sizer, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
This is your book that you wrote about Zion's Christian soldiers. This is one of the books that you wrote. Can you explain to us what is Christian Zionism?
Christian Zionism is Christians who support Zionism as a political system, who believe that that Zionism has its roots in the scriptures, in the Hebrew scriptures, and that in some sense the creation of the state of Israel is the fulfillment of God's will for the Jewish people, and the best thing the rest of the world can do is see it and accept it and work with it.
Can you explain your beliefs? Where did you reach the point of explaining what happened to you in your childhood? Probably you were brought up as a normal Christian?
Yes. As a young Christian in my late teens, early 20s, I visited Israel. I wanted to view the land where Jesus lived. The land of Palestine, the Holy Land, is the fifth gospel. It's the geography, it's the history of the Bible, and I wanted to learn more about my faith. It's like wanting to go to Mecca, you know, you want to go on a Hajj, you want to deepen your faith. And it was very moving, but I discovered that I had inherited a script that viewed the Jews as God's chosen people, and the Palestinians were a problem. They were the Philistines. They were the enemy of God's people. And therefore, I was nervous about meeting with them. We avoided them. You know, we went to the holy sites. We took our photographs. We read our Bible. We had our religious experience. And we were just a little frustrated that, you know, the Palestinians were in the way of God's will being realized for the Jewish people. And but I went back a second time and a third time and a fourth time, and every time I went back, a little bit more of that romantic vision dissipated, and I began to get to know Palestinian Christians. I'd been brought up to believe all Palestinians were Muslims. The problem was between the Jews and the Muslims. But to discover a Christian, an indigenous Christian Palestinian community, was a revelation. That they'd been there for 2,000 years, that they were suffering as a result of Zionism, and they were suffering largely because the church in the West sided with Israel against the Palestinians. And I began to be troubled by that. And so I did a PhD over about a 10-year period dealing with the historical roots of the Middle East conflict, the role of the church, and discovering the roots of Christian Zionism. You know, most people don't appreciate that there are 10 times more Christian Zionists in the world than there are Jewish Zionists. Mm. That Zionism is largely a Christian political viewpoint. Oh, it's been birthed, if you like, in Christianity from the 19th century.
It's in your research that you discovered the elements of Zionism, or were they defined somewhere else, along the way in your after your active life?
Well, if you read most Zionist histories, there's no mention of the role of the church played or the influence of Christians had on the development of Zionism as a political movement or its acceptance within Western political circles. But from the 1810s, 1809, you find Christians actively lobbying and encouraging the Jews to go back to Palestine in the belief that this was God's will for the Jewish people and the church. And so long before Herzl came up with his slogan, a land of no people for a people with no land, Lord Shaftesbury had come up with an expression, a country without a people for a people without a country, 50 years earlier.
Well, let's come back to the modern world and the fact that the Zionist lobbies, as we call them, they have a lot of influence in what happens around the world. Do you agree? And what do you think is the reasons to the events which are happening specifically in the Middle East and maybe in other parts of the world?
Well, the influence of the Zionist lobby really goes back about 100 years. Toward the end of the 19th century, for example, Britain was at war with Germany in the First World War, and it was a kind of a stalemate. Two sides were kind of about equal in terms of power, influence, and both sides looked to the Jews for support against the others. Ironically, 100 years earlier, Wellington and Nelson and, you know, the British leadership looked to the Jews to help them defeat Napoleon. Mm-hmm. Napoleon pulled a fast one, and Napoleon was the first world ruler to promise the Jews a homeland in 1799 because he thought the Jews would help him defeat the British. Well, as it turned out, we beat the French. But 100 years later, it was Germany v. Britain, both competing for Jewish support. And Britain did a deal with the Zionist movement that Britain would back Zionist aspirations in Israel if the Zionists could convince the Americans to come into the First World War on the side of the British against the Germans. And that's what happened. So to some extent, British support for Zionism was payback for Zionists helping to lobby and influence the United States to come in on Britain's side in the First World War. So that lobby, if you like, has grown in significance, and the Zionist lobby has been very smart, it has been very strategic, and it has used its resources to influence the media, politicians in particular, to some extent educational circles too, to convince political leaders and general public to warm more to an Israeli perspective or a Zionist perspective than perhaps one that's more evenly balanced in the Middle East.
Do you think this is more basically religious from your research? Did you see more of this religious background which has led to this, let's say, influence and this power? Or are there other notions of maybe economy and other things which have ignited this thrust towards the Zionist approach?
Well, it's ironic that Zionism until the 1950s, 1960s was largely secular. It was a political movement that if you go back to the days of the kibbutzes, it came out of Eastern Europe, socialism, you know, the collective farms, pioneer movements, the parallels with the settlers in North America. But in the 60s, particularly, the Zionists figured out that if they were going to galvanize U.S. support for Israel, they needed to play the religious card. And so from the 60s and 70s particularly, the Zionists encouraged the fundamentalists, the evangelicals, the mega churches, if you like, in America to come out to Israel. And they used the scriptures to encourage them to see that this, in some sense, was the Bible coming true. You have to remember in the 50s and 60s, the enemy was Russia, China, communism, and Israel was part of the democratic West, if you like, the bastion in the Middle East, whereas Egypt and Syria were under Soviet influence. Religious Zionism is a much more recent phenomenon. If you look at the settler movement now, it's predominantly or dominated by religious settlers who believe that they are living out their Jewish faith politically, you know, creating facts on the ground.
The excuse for this country named Israel, do you think that came from the events that happened in Europe? Can you give us your take on that? And what have you found in your research?
Well, it is tragic that the suffering of the Jewish people in in Europe through the Second World War in particular, has led to 56 years of suffering for the Palestinians. That one people who were persecuted have turned to become the persecutors of the Palestinians. I think that Europe has tolerated what Israel has done for two reasons. Guilt for the Holocaust and fear of anti-Semitism. On both counts, typically Europeans have been reluctant to criticize Israel for human rights abuses, for war crimes, for apartheid. We've been quite willing to criticize other nations for its human rights abuses.
You said people are afraid of criticizing. Is this the fact that the West considers itself a cradle of freedom of speech? Do you think that you had the possibility of being free to express your views in Europe?
Well, I have been free, and I have expressed my views. But pretty soon you discover that if you express views critical of Israel, you do arouse criticism and opposition. And I think that's why many within the media, the BBC, journalists, mainstream newspapers, and politicians are reluctant to be critical of Israel, because they know that they will suffer the consequences.
Your first book about Christian Zionism was the first reference to Christian Zionism.
One of the first references, yes.
Yes.
It came out in around 2004. It's been published in Arabic, in Farsi by IRIB, and it deals with the historical roots of the movement, its theological agenda, its distinctive beliefs, and then its political strategy to turn those convictions into reality. So I show, for example, how there's a very clear, very simple political strategy. The first is, if you believe that the Jews are God's chosen people, you will support the Jews. You will defend Israel. You will target those critical of Israel. So you campaign politically in the White House, the Senate, Congress, Parliament, on behalf of Israel. If you believe that the Jews are God's chosen people and that God gave them the land of the Middle East, then you will support their return. You will fund the return of Jews from Russia, for example, to Israel. If you believe God gave the Jews the West Bank, the Golan, Jordan, then you will encourage the settlement movement. So you have Christian organizations that encourage churches to adopt a settlement, to fund a settlement, a Jewish settlement in the occupied territories. At the moment, the only country in the world that recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel is Israel. No other country in the world recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. There are no embassies in Jerusalem. All the embassies are in Tel Aviv. There is one embassy in Jerusalem, the Christian embassy. So there is a campaign to get the United States to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. How do you do that? You simply move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. And if the U.S. moves its embassy to Jerusalem, everyone else will do the same. And de facto, Jerusalem becomes capital. So there are Christian organizations lobbying Congress to move the embassy to Jerusalem. The legislation has been passed on at least three occasions. The funding has been allocated. The building has been identified. But three successive presidents have refused to sign the legislation. So it's failed. The Zionist lobby, the religious Zionist lobby, wants to see the temple rebuilt. The problem is the Haram al-Sharif, the Dome of the Rock, is in the way. And so you find Christian groups campaigning with Jewish settlers to destroy the Dome of the Rock in order to rebuild the Jewish temple. So in its extreme form, Christian Zionism is very provocative. It is apocalyptic. It is very fundamentalist in a military sense, very little different to ISIS or Al-Qaeda in terms of what it's prepared to support.
We talked about the apocalypse and the fact that these events that are happening in the Middle East They also are very much in the same plan as the big Middle East plan, with the Jewish state of Israel as being the dominant power. What do you think will be the result of the West continuing to support this attitude of domination in other ways in the same region, which has already seen the presence of all these countries?
Well, in every generation, for hundreds if not thousands of years, there have been people who held to an apocalyptic theology. So it's not something new, that extremism that believes that they will bring about God's will through violence or through force is sadly an aberration in all three monotheistic faiths. One of the leading Jewish settlers, Zionists, Gershon Salomon, says we must have a war. The Messiah will not come by himself. We must bring him by fighting. Now, that was the position of the Zealots in the first century. They believed that as they fought, God would vindicate them. It's not that dissimilar to many of the fundamentalist groups in the Middle East today. They believe God is on their side rather than asking, am I on God's side? Am I following his revealed will in the scriptures? Or am I using God as an excuse to further my political aims? I mean, my concern is that the Jewish people are going to suffer as a consequence of, if you like, the West perpetuating this conflict in the Middle East. We talk about the two-state solution. America, Europe insists it supports the two-state solution, but we've vetoed attempts of the Palestinians to gain recognition in the United Nations. If we believe in the two states, why won't we support the two states? That inconsistency is perpetuating the violence, and I believe ultimately the Jews will suffer the consequence of that. And those that are astute recognize that within Christian Zionism, the Jews are act three in a four-act play. They're not there in the end, because we've had this great battle of Armageddon and only the followers of Jesus are saved and everyone else is destroyed. You know, if I was Jewish, would I really want those kinds of people supporting me? Because I realize they're using me for their theology, not mine.
Well, this brings me to your own vision and how your own way of today dealing with these actions and the suffering that you're going through yourself because of your belief. Somehow, you also are relating to what you think is right in your manner of existence today.
I go back to the roots of my faith, and I go back to the scriptures and recognize that God is not a real estate agent. God is, he's created this world. Everyone is equal in his sight. We're all created in his image, men and women, all nations. And his will is that we all come to recognize him and obey him, follow him, serve him. And we express that in the way that we treat others. And we express it particularly in the way that we treat the widows, the orphans, the refugees, the marginalized, the poor. All through the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian scriptures, a test of one's holiness, a test of one's faith, was how you treated others. And, you can go to the prophet Micah. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, not believe in justice, do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God? Someone who aspires to be a follower of Jesus, he said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, turn the other cheek. It's an act of defiance. When someone hits you, it's an act of defiance to stay there and refuse to retaliate. It humiliates your opponent. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. You know, the best way to turn an enemy into a friend is to show compassion for them, to care for them, to show that God calls us to a higher ethical standard. Now, that may sound unrealistic, it may sound naive, but it works. Let's give you one instance. A week after 9/11, I was in Leicester. It's a large Asian immigrant population. I was hungry. I asked a friend, you know, where could I buy some a takeaway? He recommended somewhere. He said, but it's a Muslim shop. I went in. No other customers. The guy had to cook the food for me in front of me. I was having a conversation with him. I was being polite. I asked him about his family. I think he knew I was a Christian, but maybe he did, maybe he didn't. He wrapped my food. I put the money down. He gave me the food, and he said, no, I want you to have the food. I said, but I want to pay you. No, I won't take your money. I assume he wouldn't take my money because I was kind to him, because I respected him, because I was in his shop. A week later, I was back in the town preaching in a church on the Sunday about the parable of the Good Samaritan, the guy who gets beaten up, left half dead. Along come these people, and they all ignore him. Along comes a stranger, and the stranger cares for him. I told them the story. I then told them what happened the week before, and I said, I want you all to go to that shop and buy his food, bless him, retaliate, but retaliate with kindness. He showed me kindness. You show him kindness and see what the effect will be. You know, if they all went to that shop and they bought his food, what's going to happen? He's going to tell his friends. You wouldn't believe it. People from the church all came and they wanted to buy my food. You know, that creates a cycle of compassion.
When did that happen to you? When did you have this sudden urge of becoming more compassionate and using your belief and your life to go towards others?
Well, we all have a journey. We're all on a journey, and there are moments in our lives where our path crosses, if you like. We have an epiphany, an encounter with God. And as a young man, I was beaten up occasionally at school. I was skinny, and skinny people tend to get, you know, beaten up. And but it taught me that, you know, there's pain in life. But it also taught me to stand up for the person who's being abused. And so there have been occasions in life when I have felt impelled to step into a situation where someone else was suffering. Because I'd suffered, I didn't want them to suffer too. When I got to meet with Palestinians, Christians and Muslims, and saw the way they were being treated, I came to a realization I wanted to advocate for them, speak for them in the West, and show my love for the Jewish people by showing that we must work for justice for the Palestinians. Because if there is to be peace for the Jews, security for the Jews, there must be justice for the Palestinians. Hold them together in our prayers.
Thank you very much, Stephen Sizer. Thanks for joining us. And I remind that your book is going to be translated, Christian Zionism is going to be translated in Persian.
Thank you.
And this other book, Zion's Christian Soldiers, which is also, I think, you can find on Amazon.
It's on Amazon. It's in Arabic.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.